What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. Two new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back. We're better. Let's get it.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
Well, what would be absolutely perfect, not only do the Bills win the Super Bowl this year with Reggie Gilliam going 10 for 90 and two touchdowns and... your buddy Wilkerson catching eight passes and Amari Cooper coming back to catch the game winner. But that my headphones, which have been talking to me here for a few weeks, that's the last day of the head. They go out. Not repairable. We make it to the Super Bowl. They win it. And the mic drop is the headphones are like, I'm done.
How much do these headphones mean to you? Do you really like these headphones?
They're all the same to me.
Okay. Because I haven't had a pair of headphones that I felt like, I really like these. They're comfortable. I like how they sound, whatever. It's been a long time, but Tom Maddy in engineering has repaired, like if there's a loose wire probably, like he's taken apart the lead for me and like rewired it and fixed headphones. Like,
I'd rather have it fixed than broken. But
yeah, well, it's just a thought.
I don't want to trouble anyone.
He might appreciate needing his help.
You think?
Yeah.
I need help. I know that.
Sounds like it.
Yeah, I mean, everything is the same to me.
Or doesn't sound like it.
Headphones, chairs, cars, really just if it works, I'm good. That's how I am. Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. Sal, Ben Albright says hi.
Oh, yeah, Ben's great. I met up with him at the Combine last year. We talked ball a little bit. Talked life a little bit. He's a good guy.
I don't know why he didn't just tell you, but he went through us. So that's that's how we came to know that he wanted to send you this message. So I guess just let's run it down. How different is today than yesterday on the injury list?
There's stuff that we didn't get to yesterday, right? Like Rousseau limited with a back, Epinesa limited with a neck. Like that.
So not necessarily different, but there's more.
There was more that we didn't even get to because our minds were blown by the Shavers news.
I agree, but I would say, as you guys would predict, on a day like yesterday, probably not a lot to worry about too much. So not getting into it yesterday, I think that's okay because today is actually the more important day, right? And because yesterday was more like a normal Wednesday, it was a Tuesday. Today is your normal big practice day. So the things that are different, Josh Allen went from a limited participant to a full participant. He is listed with three different body parts on the injury report. Foot, knee, and right finger, which we all saw those things happening in the game on Sunday. And then the other one is Matt Prater went from a did not practice to a full participant, which is good. Shaq Thompson was added to the injury report as limited, but I would say I would not be concerned with that. He was in a red non-contact jersey. He's had neck limited every day for the last 3 weeks with a red non-contact, and that's basically all it was today.
I probably should just say something to bring up Prater because last week I was pretty firm. Like I just wouldn't risk it. But I always wanted to preface that with, I don't really know how he feels. And there was a lot of uncertainty about what actually happened to him in week 18 when he left that game. But not only did they showed the confidence in him to dress him, kicks a 50-yard field goal early in the game. They don't use him on kickoffs. And Sean McDermott said that was the plan to not use him on kickoffs. So there was not like a late decision. And the punter, Wisnowski, who goes in and kicks the ball off, seemed like somebody who has done that a million times, just like perfectly placed for most of the game. So onward, I guess, with Prater and maybe Wisnowski as the kickoff man.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know what their plan is this week, but I could see that. I could see them going with Mitch Wisnowski again to kick off. And It didn't hurt them, that's for sure. I mean, the last kickoff was really important.
After perfect.
The Bills had scored.
Yep,
when they scored that touchdown, and it really helped the Bills, obviously. He had a really nice punt. He had one that he wasn't very nice as well during the game. I think he did a pretty good job last week. It is interesting to me, too, Mike, from this standpoint, which is we spent a lot last week talking about, okay, on one side you have Mega Leg over there, Cam Little, who can kick it from Broward County into, you know, Duval. And then on the Bills side, you got an injured 41-year-old guy. What are you going to do with him? Man, total kicking advantage to Jacksonville. What happened in the game? Mega Leg misses one from 55, and then the 41-year-old injured dude nails one from 50, and that's the difference in the game.
Right, he missed right before halftime there.
Pretty cool. So what about the rest of the injuries here? Like Epinesa, Rousseau, like that jumped out when I saw the injury report after we got off the air last night and was like, whoa. I didn't even know that these things were you know, in the window at all.
Yeah, so Terrell Bernard, calf, AJ Epinesa, neck, Dalton Kincaid, knee and calf, Matt Milano, ankle, Greg Rousseau, back, all limited today, all limited yesterday. The fact that they were limited both days in a row, the fact that it's a playoff game coming up, I mean, I don't know what it would take other than some sort of big setback for these guys not to play, you know what I mean? So I wouldn't read too much into it other than them being banged up, you know what I mean? But we'll find out tomorrow when Sean McDermott joins me on the Extra Point Show. We'll do our normal Friday thing on Thursday tomorrow, and we'll get the injury report. And then, you know, I think on the encouraging sign today also was you again had Ed Oliver practicing, and today was the big day, I think, for Ed Oliver, right? So he's got, I put video, you guys can see it. He's got a big brace on his elbow and arm, his bicep area. That's the bicep is what it's listed at. What's funny is on the injury report, there's no knee listed, but he had the meniscus cleanup a few weeks ago, right? So it's just bicep listed. He was limited today. He had a sleeve on his knee, did not have a brace. I thought that was, I was looking right away for that when I got the practice today. Did not have one. Curtis Samuel, a full participant 2 days in a row, which is really good and encouraging. He's still on IR. They can activate him as well. And then Damar Hamlin, also a full participant. And given the fact of Jordan Poyer being down, I would not, you know, be stunned if Damar Hamlin's on the active roster Saturday.
You know, Sal, I asked you something like this yesterday, and I reserve the right to do it again tomorrow, but
yeah,
like it's so in my head how the Bills are going to go from a grueling road game on Sunday to this game on Saturday afternoon where the Broncos have been, you know, watching with their feet up or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I know Allen talks, and maybe this is almost everybody on the team or everybody. Like he just won't even take a question about his injuries. Like I'm just not talking about it. Nope, not a problem.
We're good.
And whether it's injuries or just like the rigor of this test here, are guys going to admit that, like, yeah, this is hard? Or is that kind of maybe something that a player or even like from a coach's mandate would want to not do? Like, don't let it get in your head that, you know, we're traveling on Friday afternoon for a Saturday afternoon game, all of it.
You know, I think when the season's over, let's just say the, you know, worst case scenario happens and the Bills lose on Saturday. I think that's when you come back on Sunday, if they do locker clean out, that's when you hear things like that. Like, yeah, you know, we've been banged up. We were really trying to get through and, you know, it was really tough. You know, you hear those things. I remember the year they lost at home to Cincinnati and going in the locker room the next day, you know, locker clean out. And I just remember a couple guys saying to me, you know, we just really needed a break. We really needed a break. We never got one. We were hoping to get to through the AFC Championship game. If we could get to the Super Bowl, we'd have a week off. Like they were openly, we needed a break. We didn't get one. You know, leading into it, they never said anything like that.
Right.
And they never said we need a break right now. Never said our bodies are feeling it. Now, in this case, I do think it's different because they are used to playing on short weeks sometimes. We know that in the NFL. You play on Sunday, then you play on Thursday. If you remember when they, you know, played a couple Thursday night games this year, they went from Jets to Miami game. They went from whichever it was to the Houston game, Tampa to Houston. And yeah, they lost in Houston, but they had a couple injuries and it's just what they do. It's routine. And I think the Bills right now with the way they played and feeling really good about not physically necessarily their bodies, but feeling good about going on the road and playing and beating a team, I think they're just ready to go out and just play again. That's what they do. That's what their bodies are trained to do all the time. So maybe when they have a moment to not let that, they're running on the adrenaline. They're running on the practice. They're running on the routine right now. And I think that's just what their bodies are doing. And if they were to happen to lose, then we might hear things like that. I think as long as they keep winning, they just want to keep rolling in, not talk about it, not think about it. And it's not a thing.
So we think Samuel, it's encouraging, right? Full practice today. He's got to be the first guy you think of, you know, to try to fill this void here left by, you know, Palmer was just last week to IR. And then on top of that, of course, Davis and Shavers tear their ACLs in this game against Jacksonville on Sunday. So Samuel, do you have a guess about Hardman and or Wilkerson at this point? Being the fifth guy?
I would guess Hardman. This is just my guess. And the reason why would be, I think because you're so down with receivers, could you really also risk having Khalil Shakir return punts? Now, I've thought that before, and they still had him back there, right? So maybe they even put Keon Coleman back there in week 17, right? But in week 18, excuse me. But to me, it feels like it would be Hardman because you want to also have the element of, we got to protect these guys on special teams. Now, you could also make the argument, Sneaky Joe brought this up this morning, it was a really good point. Like, Wilkerson would be more of a natural replacement for Shavers on special teams, right? He'd be more of a natural, okay, you're going to have this guy run down the field. He's a bigger body. He can tackle a little bit. And then you can use him in the run game, too, because of that. So I wouldn't completely dismiss it. But if I had to guess, I think Samuel probably gets, you know, activated. That's one spot. They have two open spots, by the way, on the roster right now. They did put Shavers officially on IR. And I would guess maybe Hardman gets elevated. So you still have one more spot that could be used for Ed Oliver. So, and then if you want DeMar Hamlin, and DeMar Hamlin might be really needed for special teams because of everything we're talking about, then you'd have to actually make a move if all the other guys join as well. That move could be Baylen Specter if you feel good enough that Terrell Bernard's going to play. But you also don't have Bernard play special teams. Specter actually has a role there, right? I mean, like it's a lot to – Kalecki Latu. You have four tight ends on the roster right now. There's a lot of juggling that has to be done between now and Friday at 4 p.m. Let's remember that's the deadline.
The Bills should be lucky Paul doesn't run this league, because Paul would just be like, no more
moves,
you're
done. They'd be out of moves.
So long ago, they'd be out of moves. Just, no, you're done. Make it work.
Sal, I had to play Rashid Shaheed in the playoffs in a quarterback two spot because I was out of moves in Paul's league.
Sort of a stern, no-nonsense level of, you know, commissionership.
Yeah. I want to say Hardman returning pie. It's not saying that he wouldn't be active, and obviously he is a return man, and McDermott seems pretty turned on by his speed, at least when he last talked about Hardman, but he did muff one punt in the only game he played, and in a playoff game, not having been on the field in weeks here, boy, I wouldn't be surprised if you just tell Shakir, look, just catch it and just don't worry about it. Right, just
totally
Chris Watson punt catcher time, and don't worry about making people miss. Don't try too hard back there because, you know, you obviously matter to the offense. But I know they trust him to field the ball cleanly. And Hardman, I would understand them being a little leery of just because there was one mistake, and he only had, you know, a very limited opportunity.
I agree with you. The thing I keep looking at, though, is they're not going to roll into a game of four receivers. So it's got to be either him or Wilkerson. And you could make the argument Wilkerson, like I just said, and that's fine. But is Wilkerson really helping you on offense at all? They might need pass catchers, right? You know, and that might be Hardman more than Wilkerson. So I think it's a tough call on how they want to play all this.
Yep. Yeah, they could put Hardman up and just not use him on punt returns, obviously.
That's right.
Just use him, you know, use him in select, whatever, you know, deep pattern type stuff. But I feel like maybe Cooks has sort of taken that role that they were looking for now that he's here, because Hardman got here before Cooks did. I'm almost positive of that. So I wonder if there's even, if they see style-wise a need for Hardman with Cooks here now.
No, it's a good point. I mean, their philosophy hasn't been to drive the ball downfield through the air, but they've done a little bit more of that lately, albeit with Cooks.
With Cooks, yeah.
Maybe it's something that they feel they can lean into in this game. In fact, I was looking at some numbers. That has been one of the areas where, as good as Denver's been, they've given up a few of those this year. And maybe that's something that the Bills feel that, hey, they're going to play man-to-man because they play a lot of man. And if they're going to play man-to-man, we're going to put a little more speed on the field. And, you know, we got to protect Josh and see if we can get a guy loose.
Sal, what do you think Denver's most dangerous offensive element is? Is it RJ Harvey? Is it, I don't know, one of their receivers? Yeah. What if you're the Bills planning for this game, what are you most, you know, not worried about, but sort of like cognizant of?
Keeping Bo Nix in the pocket. Their most dangerous element is when Bo Nix is out of pocket, out of structure, and can make plays. Now, I do think Courtland Sutton is probably their best offensive player. He's really good. Courtland Sutton is really good. But a lot of what happens is Bo Nix runs around, he gets out of the pocket, and he makes plays. He is in a lot of ways, guys, like that. I'm not comparing him to Josh Allen as a player, but he's better out of structure right now at this point of his career than he is in the pocket. A lot like Josh was a little bit early in his career. When things are speeding up for him, he says, okay, I got to speed up and I got to make a play here. He can get a little out of sorts when he does that. It's very chaotic. But he can make a play or he can make a disastrous play. You know what I mean? But that's if you you keep him in the pocket, mm-hmm. he's a less completion percentage. I think he looks to try and make a play with his legs. He gets a little frustrated, and that's when you can force him into a mistake. Now, this is a Denver Broncos team that does not allow a lot of sacks. I think they allow the least sacks in the league, if I'm correct on that. There's a Bills team that doesn't sack the quarterback a lot. Okay, fine. Because you know what? To me, I don't think the Bills should be concentrating on trying to sack him. You just got to keep him contained. You keep him in the pocket. To me, that's their biggest weapon they have.
Sack totals this year, Denver had 68. So I'm looking at defense. Yeah. That's not what you brought up. And the Bills had 36.
He was sacked 22 times, Bo Nix.
That's it.
And Allen 40.
Yeah.
Allen 14 last year.
Right. 22 is a low number. Yeah.
So I would just go with a cage rush. You know what I mean? That's what I think you need to do this week. Yeah. Now, if you get him in a third and eight or whatever, you know, okay, have your chance. He wants to run. We'll try and be there. But I just think this week might be a week where you're not going to probably get to him anyway. But what you can do is contain him and force him into a mistake.
Do you think Jacksonville is a better team than Denver?
I do think they're overall a better team. Yeah, I do. Each team does some things a little better than the other. No doubt about that. But I think Jacksonville, I think this defense is better, like creating big plays and havoc and getting to the quarterback. And they're both very good against the run. These guys have a shutdown secondary. I think the Jacksonville offense is definitely better overall.
Denver is one difference between the Jaguars and the Broncos is takeaways. For as good as the Denver defense is statistically, they did not take the ball away very much this year. Like, they're low in interceptions. 14 takeaways, period. That's tied for the fourth fewest in the NFL. I think that's largely a luck stat. But, you know, to that point, Jacksonville had something like 31, and they had the Ray Davis fumble on special teams, but that was it against the Bills offense last week. But
you know, I think to me, Mike, it's like a sliding scale. One team is really good at sacking the quarterback, but not great at taking the ball away. The other is not very good at sacking the quarterback, but really good at taking the ball away. Right. So I do think those things are related, by the way. Like, if you're sacking the quarterback, he can't throw it to you. You can fumble it to him. He can't throw it to you. But if you're impacting the quarterback, but not sacking him, he can throw it to you.
What's my third down running back life looking like right now? Because that's something where if you're worried about getting sacks, you want to have somebody in there you can trust. And did they really use Cook? What did you see? What do the numbers say on this? Like, last week on third down, when I think about it now, when I looked at it and thought about it last week, it was like, yeah, they're not giving him any more responsibility, but maybe they did a little bit.
No, I mean Frank Gore saw the field a couple times too, by the way.
Yeah.
No, they went empty a lot, actually, on third
down. Right.
They went empty a lot, and they just basically put receivers on the field and, you know, threw some outlet passes and threw a screen pass and, you know, let Josh Allen kind of do his thing a little bit. So, no, I don't think that they put Cook in that situation a lot last week. I think that they went empty and basically said, you know, we're going to spread the field. Have you declare what you're doing and let Josh go find his matchup.
Is there a way for them – do you think they would pivot to – a short, quick passing game involving Cook, more so than what we've seen most of the year? I'm talking about a kind of a steady diet because of how short they are at receiver. And if you're going to load up with, you know, bigger personnel, you can still throw out of that and maybe passes in the flat or wheel routes, whatever it is, to Cook out of the backfield would be a good pivot, and maybe not something that the Bills are really known for, and if they can execute it, maybe there's value in that.
Sure, it's not a bad plan to me. The Bills have not been doing that a lot this year, and I don't know how much they want to pivot to that specifically. Tight ends, I think, is a different story, though, and you could find maybe some room there. And this is another defense that's given up some numbers to tight ends this year. They've actually been very good at defending running backs this year, the Broncos. But if you remember last year, of course, a couple big plays. One, Ty Johnson caught that 26-yard touchdown pass from Josh Allen when Josh was running around back there. You guys remember that play?
Yeah, we talked about it yesterday. Yeah,
I'm actually looking at last year's box score of the game, and Ty Johnson is the only running back in the Bills to catch a pass. He had two targets, two catches. That's it. That's how they attacked him. Now, it doesn't have to be the same game plan, of course. Right. But it is the same defensive coordinator. It is largely the same defensive players. So I don't know if they would want to go that route.
Benjamin Albright did tell us to expect Surtain on a tight end on third downs. And to me, that's Kincaid, if Kincaid is on the field on third downs. If they, you know, follow their tendencies. Like that, if they feel like the best, you know, the biggest threat in a passing game is a tight end, they will put him on that guy. And I feel like if I'm lining up to play the Bills and Kincaid's on the field on third down, I'm probably going to consider him the biggest threat.
Yeah.
It's Draymond Green kicking off my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast. And trust me, I'm not holding back. Listen to the Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
I totally understand that. You know, you guys said this yesterday. I think you said it, Bulldog. I'm pretty sure. And I agree with it, which is when you have Surtain and he's a shutdown guy, well, then, okay, well, you can pick a guy to shut down on the Bills, but the Bills' whole philosophy is we want to come at you with guys you don't need to shut down.
Yeah, I kind of negate your superpower. Whole bunch of guys. I negate your superpower by not having a guy you need to shut down. Which is
that's exactly right. That's exactly 4D, right. Because
4D chess. Yeah.
A little backwards.
Right. That's exactly right. So Khalil Shakir last year, 6 targets, 6 catches, 61 yards in that game, right? Curtis Samuel, 3 catches, 68 yards and a touchdown. Like, the Bills did a good job last year of spreading it out against them. You had 4 guys with over 20 yards. You had over 30 yards receiving last year. And Curtis Samuel had a real big play down the field, by the way, for a touchdown. So, you know, I think that's probably a good call, and that Ben is saying what they're going to do. I don't know if that really threatens the Bills that much, or they might feel like, that's fine. We'll just throw it to Khalil Shakir in that situation.
Oh, that's exactly how they planned it. Next week, Christian Gonzalez. So what? We don't need our wide receivers. We're not going to threaten you there. So we've neutralized, you know, the whole thing. Sal, if I were to buy one of these troughs from the stadium, would you sign it? Is that something you would sign for somebody if asked?
Absolutely.
I would
sign a trough, yes.
For anybody?
I mean, I would think, unless I know somebody and they're just kind of a jerk or something, I would, but yeah, sure, why not?
Bulldog,
I've signed items before, and I mean,
I'll sign anything.
You know, yeah, I'll sign it. Like, why not? My philosophy, if it's important enough for you to ask me to do it, then it's important for me to do it for you.
Okay. Not surprised to hear you say that. Very impressive.
I was on a national or Denver spot the other day. Oh, you know, believe it was Portland, Oregon, believe it or not. Oregon. And they asked me if I could have something from that stadium, what would it be? And it was I don't know. If I sat and thought about it, I might pick something different. But I said, you know, for me, maybe like the yellow line on the turf on the field, like where it's painted yellow, because I can't cross that thing during a game. So good. I'm putting it in my house, and I'm crossing it every single day for the rest of my life.
Right.
The line between like the 30 and the middle, is that right around where that line is? Like where the media is not allowed to loiter? Is that what
pretty
you
much,
mean?
Yeah. But it extends from goal line to goal line. But yeah, it's, you know what I mean? You can't walk over it towards the field. You know, Mike, on the sidelines towards the field. There's a yellow line right there. Right. And I'm going to tell you guys, I'm not kidding you. I have been in some stadiums, Tennessee comes to mind for sure for this, where there is security personnel that if your toe is touching that line, they will let you know to move back. Hmm.
There is also a boundary, though, between, like, the middle is not available to the reporters. I don't know if it's the same color, but
yeah,
those are good. I was going to say the scoreboard would be what I'd pick.
Oh, I mean, that'd be pretty cool,
if I could pick one thing from the stadium to have, I'd pick the scoreboard.
Put that in your garage.
Like the video board?
How big is your garage?
I'd get a new garage, I guess. Right. I'd have to.
Yeah.
I would rather have the scoreboard than a trough.
Sal, are we allowed to promote your event for tonight? This is an awkward way to ask this. I should have texted you, but you got a pretty cool thing going tonight, I think.
Yeah, I'm just going to be hanging out tonight down at Sports City Pizza Pub, hanging out and talking 0506 Sabres with Joe DiBiase, Tim Graham. We're going to be just kind of reminiscing a little bit about the Sabres. So, yeah, if people want to come by and enjoy and talk Bills football, we can do that too.
Good deal. Good for you. Say hi to everybody down there for me, will you?
All right. You got it, buddy.
That's our Sal Capaccio on the West Her Hotline. His appearances are brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
My number one story about that year is getting season tickets. And it's not a word I can say on the air, the story at its best, but it's one of my favorite stories. The Mike Gilbert story about getting tickets?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, don't. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It's not even one of the seven words you can never say, but it's adjacent.
Yeah.
So I don't think I will. But I love that story. That's the year my wife and I got in. A shorter, just to have it make some sense. Let's do it after.
Okay.
Because then I can think about whether I want to say any of it.
And maybe we'll just forget about it.
That often happens too.
Right.
0506 Sabres lore. 803-0550 for your calls. The Sabres host Philadelphia tonight, Montreal tomorrow at 7. Tonight's game's at 7:30, so pregame at 6:30 with us. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, this is WGR.
What's up? It's Draymond Green, back for my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast, The Draymond Green Show. Unfiltered takes, real hoop talk, and big-time guests. There's no holding back on the court or on the mic. Follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.